Everyone is born a prospect with unlimited potential. The question is, what blueprint do you follow to unlock that potential to help your prospect become a successful athlete, student, and most importantly, human being? Where do you begin? Who do you trust? What organizations are best? Is travel ball a necessity? What about lessons, camps? Which vendors provide the best equipment? Which tournaments are worth it? And which events are nothing more than hyped up money grabs? Lord knows there's plenty of those these days. We're there to help young developing athletes, moms, dads, friends, relatives, and those who support them with the intellectual resources, advice, anecdotes, and information to make the amateur athlete's journey an easier one. I'm Kelly Kleinman, and this is the Prospect Blueprint Podcast. Hello, and welcome to the Prospect Blueprint Podcast. I'm Kelly Kleinman. On today's podcast, we have with us a good pal of mine, former Jersey boy and All-State pitcher at Piscataway Township High School, former Maryland Terp, former Milwaukee Brewer hurler, and producer of such films as The Rookie, The Game Plan, Million Dollar Arm, Invincible, McFarland USA, and most recently, Fallen. He also produced the Emmy Award-winning ESPN 30 for 30. That was Big Shot, right?
Yep,
there you go. He can currently be found on a golf course near you, and if you want to look bad, call him with a tee time. He shot an 81 yesterday in 106 degrees, not easy. He is named Mark Chardy. Mark, welcome to our maiden voyage on the Prospect Blueprint.
How you doing? Thanks for having me on. And yeah, that was my greatest accomplishment yesterday.
Pretty good.
Shooting that in that heat.
I'm telling you, not many people brave those infernos. Well, I wanted to have you on for a couple of reasons. I want you to share with us what your journey was like to the big leagues, how you got discovered in high school, what the college experience was like, and how those relationships and network that you developed at the University of Maryland have stayed with you over the years and helped build your network and who you are today. And then the challenges that you've had raising sons, trying to get them infatuated with the game, this is baseball specifically, as you were, because in today's day and age, there's a lot of options and directions a kid can go. How does our generation plant this, in our generation, yours and I, plant the seed for the love of the game in fertile soil? So that's just for starters.
Sure.
You know, take us back to your carefree days of being a kid in Piscataway.
Yeah, I
walk
mean,
us through your movement.
Sure. Back when, you know, I'm 58, almost 59 now. So in the 70s, you know, is when I started, late 60s. I think I started a year early and fouled one ball off in baseball. My dad snuck me in. And then the next year I started seeing success and could see that I was, you know, kind of maybe had a talent for the game. And actually it was right before Little League. I went across the town and basically tried out for a team. It's kind of like they had in the old days of baseball. And we put together this super team where in 3 years we lost one game with this group of kids coming from like the, you know, the whatever league it was called. And I think like four or five kids off that team ended up playing on the high school team. So it was kind of a great way for me to get started with baseball, and I fell in love with it. And each year, you know, kind of got better and better. And you know, we had a great town in Piscataway from Little League on up through Babe Ruth and then high school. So, you know, looking back, it was like we were always good, you know, even the kids older than me. So I was always aspired to play baseball there. And I used to ride up. It was only about maybe a quarter mile to get to where the high school team played their games. And I used to ride my bike up there and just sit behind the fence and watch these guys throw and couldn't believe it. And said, you know, one day maybe I'll be able to, you know, play on that field. And sure enough, you know, I, you know, kept getting better and, you know, just kept playing well. We had great teams also in Babe Ruth. We, 1 year we lost in the state finals. The next year we won the states, lost in the regional final to the team that won the whole thing. So yeah, we had good talent. And then once the high school, you know, I played varsity as a young sophomore. My birthday's in August. So I tell kids, hold your kids back if they're close to that age in that summertime period. I would, yeah. It's summer. Like Hayden was born in May and I considered it, but it was like, you know, still in the school year. So he, you know, he's on the younger side, I guess, but I was on the really younger side. In fact, when I got to college my first year, I was still 17 for the first 2 weeks when I got there. But No, we had just a great program in high school and in my town. And I just always aspired to continue that. So I just kept playing, you know, and was lucky enough to get looked at. I was an all-state pitcher and I remember throwing a game at Princeton. They took the state of New Jersey and they broke it up into four parts, you know, North Jersey 1, North Jersey 2, Central Jersey and South Jersey. And I pitched for the Central Jersey team and actually I think I got the MVP of that and knew I could play beyond high school, and I didn't think I'd get drafted or anything. I declared early for the University of Maryland, but for me it was I at least was on the radar. I remember the Cincinnati Reds wrote me. I went to an open tryout there. I think I struck out like three guys on 10 pitches, and still I was a little undersized, so I was never kind of that dream. Mm-hmm. Frame, and they project out. This is way before Moneyball, but they look at you, and you can get slotted in a certain way or perceived in a certain way. But I knew I was going to college, so that was great. My sisters had both gone to college at University of Maryland, and they started recruiting me right out of the gate. And I didn't really know why, but I found out later that the assistant coach umpired a game I threw in the regionals. In Babe Ruth when I was 15, and I'd thrown really well. So he started writing me, and it was strange because my sisters were there, and I was like, okay, it just felt really natural. I'd gotten recruited, at some other schools, Seton Hall, University of Tampa, which I never understood, Delaware. I was Naval Academy. So schools kind of in the area, a lot of smaller schools, but really Maryland was the one that stood out to me. And ended up, going there and they played in the ACC, which was great. A little tough being the northernmost school in a Southern Conference, but it's all once you're playing in a Division I program, then you've kind of reached the point that a lot of kids don't. And at that point, you might have a dream as a little kid to play professionally, but it's like, getting to college is amazing. And then, was lucky enough to kind of work my way through there. And then I had, career ending injury, my ankle, had a red shirt my junior year, and then came back my senior year and played well and got drafted by Milwaukee. That's why I'm wearing the Yankee hat. But
yeah, exactly. Well, you could take the Yankee out of New York, but you can't take the New York out of Yankee.
Yeah. I've always been a Yankee fan. Yeah. And, through my formative years when I was a teenager, that was when, in the late 70s, had those amazing teams, and always been a Yankee fan, still am.
Well, let me ask you a question going back. Let's go back sort of at the beginning where you put together the super team of kids. And was this, because I'm trying to recall, we just had Legion Ball. Back in the day, you'd play your high school season. Yeah. And you have Legion Ball. I got shipped off to camp for 8 weeks, so I never was able to participate. What was that like, and who did you play with? Was it just a barnstorming thing, or was it an organized league?
Well, when I was young, when I was like 8, 9, 10, I played in, before Little League formed. At that time, Little League was just starting. By the time I was 11, that's when Little League was the whole town. It was almost like two – separate parts, and then it got organized, I guess, if I had to guess the year, it was probably like 1971. Okay. So those 3 years that I played on that amazing team was great. But then I remember I had to try out for Little League, and I remember I was the first pick, and I got on the worst team, and then for 2 years, played on the worst team in Little League, where you couldn't get, guys couldn't get outs, but I played well. And then you play on the all-star teams. And then, I remember, in Little League, they cut our town into four different all-star teams, I guess, because the size of the town. But mm-hmm. had we been able to have one team like Thousand Oaks, or whatever, I think we could have, done really well. We had a lot of talent coming out of there. But then, once you get into high school, then, or Babe Ruth and then high school, Legion Ball was kind of at the end of, high school year. It was kind of like the summer. I played after my junior year, my senior year, and then even a little bit after my freshman year in college, because I still had eligibility, and I was playing with a few different teams. But there was no cost to anything. If it was, it was nominal. And you played when you played, you didn't, you practiced a little bit and you played games, and it was like everyone had the same opportunity. There was no barrier with cost. It was, if you're lucky enough to play, you know, it wasn't much. It's uniforms and some umpires. And, you know, I don't remember if my dad paid anything. I can't even remember what it would be, but it was pretty nominal. So it's certainly changed, where this now baseball's a year round thing. And, right. Is it better? I don't know. It's probably making kids that are better prepared and more fundamentally sound, but you run the risk, I think, of just playing too much and burning kids out and not having the ability to play other sports. You know, I played a little bit of basketball. I actually wrestled 1 year in junior high, and then, you know, I played football in high school. So I was able to, I wasn't great, but, you know, at least I was able to do something else, because, you know, yeah, you waited till baseball came around, you know, so in February, March, you know, you're in a gym, and then once you get out, you can start playing. You're hungry for it. You get spoiled out here, you know, because I've raised my kids out here, and it's like beautiful year round. And, yeah, you know, it's just a different thing. But now you choose a sport, no matter what it is, and that's it. It's hard to find even a kid playing two sports, let alone three.
Yeah, it's that specializing aspect of picking a sport that you have to at such a young age. You know, college coaches say we want to get a guy who's well-rounded, plays more than one sport. But here in California, maybe Texas, even Florida, some of the warmer, even maybe Arizona, you're really not given that much of an opportunity by the high school coaches. They don't even want you playing multiple sports.
No.
So that's
I even think back east now that, you know, you've got these bubbles and training centers. The kids are just, they're training year round. They're probably working with a trainer or a pitching coach or a hitting coach and going, and a lot of them are just picking one sport, you know, in general. It's just kind of what it is now.
So as a kid, you didn't really have that off season training. You were playing the sport of the season.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Did you have, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, the only time I remember training was when I was in college, and I would, in the off season, I'd go into the, you know, wherever I could, you know, I'd work out just a bit, you know, just try to run, you know, outside or go inside and start throwing a little bit, but there was never weight training. It's completely different than what it is today.
Yeah. Now you did, as a kid, did you have pitch counts or basically just...
Somewhat. Yeah. I think, you know, if they felt like you'd thrown too much, you know, they try not to burn you out, but, you didn't play many games either, you know?
You're right.
I think in high school we had 25 games. Yeah. So you're, you know, you had two pitchers going, you know, you paid maybe four games a week. You're pitching twice, you know? So.
Yeah. I recall that it's a lot different back in the Midwest, even today, than it is out here where we, you know, you never have a game rained out, or you rarely have a game rained out. So you just, you use up so much ammunition early on. We play with a fella, he's a good player. He's 2020 as well. I won't mention any names, but he probably threw a lot, way too many pitches as a youth. And he developed some arm trouble. He missed his junior year, which is huge, you know, especially in high school today. You know, people are hyper aware of that, as are college coaches as well. So, speaking of that, what kind of velocity did you have in as a 17-year-old? What basically, I believe the pitchers are a little bit faster today because of the training than they were back in the
day.
What did you throw? What attracted you to some of these colleges? And then naturally, why did you pick Maryland?
Yeah, you know, they didn't have a lot. There weren't a lot of guns, you know, radar guns. But, you know, where they were, I remember there were some people with guns, like in some of the tournaments, you know, Babe Ruth and then Legion. But, you know, it was probably high 80s in high school going into college. So, you know, I had a good arm. You know, I think the kids now are just bigger and stronger. And also, I think the ray guns were different than the jug. The guns you see now are a little lower than the ones they used to kind of, you know, gun us with in like the minors and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because there were only a couple guys that even touched 90. And now, you know, so our guns were probably 3 miles an hour slower. So, mm-hmm. so I might have been low 90s once I was in, you know, professional. But not many guys did at that time. I could get Rob Dibble, Chris Bosio. They were like maybe four or five guys. Cause I would be up there gunning them as a starting pitcher. I would gun, you know, and clock everybody's, you know, both teams, and write it down, you know, what they're throwing.
And you'd see mostly low 90s.
High 80s, mid to high 80s, now and then 90, 91, 92. Dibble would go 93, maybe 94, which, you know, was like probably 97, 98.
So. Yeah, that's what I was alluding to, Dibble in those. Right. Days. I know Rob's a big boy. How were you notified that you got drafted?
Well, with me, it was, I also played, I forgot to say, on probably the biggest reason I got drafted, after my sophomore year in college, I got recruited to play on this team, a summer team in Baltimore called Johnnies, and probably the most decorated team. It's put more guys into professional ranks, I think, than any team from the Cape, from anywhere. It's, I mean, Reggie Jackson, Jim Pont, like, you got to see the list. If you Google it, this team, you'll see how many guys over the years, and they would play. We played 88 games in the summer. And then played in this tournament in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which took teams as far west as like Michigan, New Orleans, and then all east. And you'd create these teams that you recruited kids from sometimes around the country. There was a team in New Jersey that I played for the year before. Then I got recruited to play on Johnny's. And the guy that managed it was a guy named Walter Yauss, who was the head scout for the Brewers. And he coached this team each summer. So, and I pitched really well. I think I was like 18-3 with him that year. And when I went into my junior year, that's when I thought, you know, I'm really set up well. I could get drafted fairly high and see some money. And I was playing in the off season, February, right before we started 1981 in the gym at University of Maryland, playing basketball, goofing around. And I basically popped my ankle. And tried pitching and didn't realize how, I think I pitched two games and then I couldn't even throw. I couldn't even push off the mound, and finally got a proper, you know, sports, you know, a doctor, surgeon look at it. And he says, listen, I've got some good news and bad news. He goes, I know why you're not pitching well. And, but the bad news is you've got tore the ligaments in your ankle and you're going to need some surgery. So I had to redshirt my whole junior year and then not even knowing if I could come back. I mean, it was a big, you know, reconstructive job. And so kind of came back my senior year really slowly, started working on a changeup in the fall and then really worked that in and had a really good senior year. But, you know, you lose a lot of your value. But getting back to after my junior, I got drafted, even though I had redshirted, I got drafted, I think, in like the 32nd round by the Brewers as like, a token of, you know, hey, we still like you. And I mean, obviously I'm not going to sign, but so I came back my senior year, and then I got drafted in the 15th round, $2,500 signing bonus and gas money to right. Paintsville, Kentucky. And I tell you, I was like the last guy in the depth chart, but worked my way up and ended up, finally getting up to the big leagues. So it worked out.
Well, tell us a couple of stories about your pro ball days. They were short lived because of an injury. Mm-hmm. But I love the specific story of how you ended a winning streak.
Yeah, well, so I made the big league team in 1987 as a fifth starter. So I was a starting pitcher, and I remember I was supposed to pitch the fifth game in Texas, and we opened up against the Red Sox. This is after they lost to the Mets in the World Series with Buckner. The whole same team, right? So
sure.
We're at home in Milwaukee, and they told me the third game, you're in long, long, long relief, which means basically if the starting pitcher doesn't get out of the first or second inning, right. You know, you're fine. But just go out in the bullpen. And I remember sitting, because I was, as a starting pitcher, I'm always on the bench. I'm never in the bullpen. So it was great. I was out in the bullpen, center field, and checking things out and relaxed. And you know, I got my sneakers on, my spikes are somewhere, but I'm just hanging out. And, you know, first inning, our guy gives up like two runs. Second inning, he's getting shelled. So all of a sudden they're like, Charty, get up. And I'm scrambling around because I can't find my shoes. And that, it's like, holy shit, you know, I'm going in this game maybe. And so I'm throwing and they're like, how quick, how, you know, hurrying me up. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready. And then, you know, they're like, you're in. And I just remember the gates opening. It was like out of a movie, you know, I'm running in from center field, you know, and it was just a bizarre, you know, I just kind of went back through my life in my head, you know, of like Little League and all those things and everything my parents did, and, you know, carting me around everywhere. And I get in the game and then I wasn't prepared, right? As a starting pitcher, you have a whole different, you know, way of getting ready for a game. So, you know, 8 minutes before, I'm sitting in the dugout without a care in the world. So now I got to come in, and it was guys on second and third, one out, and I got to face Jim Rice and Dwight Evans, and I got them both out, and came in, got a big round of applause, and then went out, and I got him out 1-2-3 next inning. I'm like, this is easy. Of course, the next time around, you know, I hang a changeup to Dave Henderson. He hits a home run. The catcher comes out, and he's yelling at me. It was like out of Bull Durham. He's like, Rook, what are you doing? Because I had thrown a changeup off a fastball and got it up a little bit. I pitched well, actually, that game. I was in line for a win, and then they came back and tied it against another pitcher, and we ended up winning. But we won our first three games. We sweep Boston, then we go to Texas. Now, instead of throwing in Texas, I'm going to pitch the eighth game in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So we win another three games in Texas. So now we're 6-0. Then we go to Baltimore. We win the first game there. We're 7-0. Then I pitch. I win 5-3. So I win my first big league game, and now we're 8-0. And it's like, holy, 8-0. Now we're starting. It's, you know, 8-0 is like, sure. By the way, there was no one even 4-0, I think, this year. I think everyone was 3-1 at a certain point.
Yeah. True.
And now we're 8-0. Then we're 9-0. We sweep Baltimore. Then we go to, where do we go after that? We go to another series, or we came home and we win another three games. Now we're 12-0. And then I remember now 12-0, and then, or 11, I can't remember, but basically we were getting killed in this one game on, I think it was like Easter, and we came back from like a 8-run deficit and we win. And now we've tied the major league record at 13-0. So the Braves did it in the National League. So we've tied the record. And now we go from playing, I can't remember who we played, but at home, now we got to go to Chicago for a three game series. And I'm pitching the 14th game. So now it's like we go to Chicago. And now this is when all the cheesehead starts. And now the fans are going – now it's national news. I mean, I was doing like, you know, New York Times, you know, Sports Illustrated. We were on the cover. It was just crazy. And they were giving out free burgers, and that was a big deal. If you go back, it was interesting going back in that because it was such a frenzy for those couple of weeks. So now you go to Chicago, and it was like a World Series. The atmosphere was like a World Series. There were only probably about maybe 18,000 fans at that game, and I think of 15,000. It was like a Brewer home game because it was cold and rainy, and you know, old Comiskey, and you know, sure. No one was going to that game, but all these people bust up. And I just remember not being able to get loose. You know, I was just like so nervous the night before. Each channel I turned, all they were talking about was this game. I got there, you know, I was warming up and I was just super hyped. And you know, they had like cameras up and down the line. It was that big of a deal. And I remember striking the first guy out, and it was like, you know, the crowd went nuts, and then it went downhill from there. So I did not throw well. We ended up losing 4-1, or no, it might've been 4-0. I can't remember, but I got knocked out like in the second inning. It was not great, but, so then we go on, and I think we win the next game, and then we go to Anaheim and win another three. And now I'm pitching again, and we're like 17-1. And I pitched against the Angels, and I came out with a 5-4 lead. I didn't throw grab through five innings, gave up four runs, and was winning 5-4. But we ended up losing that game, and then I remember this one reporter going, you know, you're involved in both losses. Do you feel like you're responsible?
Yeah, right.
But it was wild because it all happened super fast and we were getting national attention. And then what happened was they wanted me to go down and because they were going to go to a four-man rotation. And so they wanted me to pitch. And they said, listen, pitch well and you'll be up in 3 weeks. And, you know, that point they'd moved their trip. I know I'm getting in the weeds here, but this is probably a podcast where it's not a bad idea to go in the weeds. But
exactly. That's
yeah.
Sure.
So then they had moved their AAA team from Vancouver to Denver. So now I get sent down to Denver, which was a launching pad. We played Mile High Stadium, which is massive. And you know, home runs are going out, triples, gappers. It was, you know, I threw a well on the road, come home, and it was just not a normal place to pitch. So, but I remember them calling me back up. I didn't get called up when they went back to a 5-man rotation. Len Barker got called up. He was a veteran, and he was throwing well in AAA. He didn't make the team out of camp.
Large Lenny Barker threw a perfect game. I'm a Cleveland fan.
Yep, he did. And so I wasn't, you know, I'm like, I get it. And then they called me back up right around the midpoint of the year. I was actually supposed to throw the 4th of July in Anaheim. And I remember getting up into the stands to chart pitches, and I tweaked my back. And it was like one of those things that, like, for 2 days, it's really hard to move or breathe. It's not, you know, it goes away, but yeah. I couldn't pitch, you know, 2 days from then. So they took somebody else up. And from that point forward, they didn't need another starter. So I spent the rest of that year in 88 in AAA and finished up actually pretty well. I was like 7-5, and all the papers said I was going to get called back up, and they didn't call me up. They brought up one, you know, kind of, you know, older first baseman journeyman and no prospects. So I was like, ugh, you know, I'm not in their plans. And then they, I was hoping to have them leave me unprotected so I could go with another team. And they actually protected me. And then through that reentry draft and then took me off right after. So I was like, ah, I'm screwed because I'm not in their plans, but they don't want me to go to another team. Yeah. So I basically came back, you know, it was 87. I spent the rest of the year in Denver. So 88, I came back. I'm now a non-roster guy. And I said, you know, I'm going to give it one more year. I'm not going to play another. I would have had to play that next year, 88 and 89, before I became a free agent. And I just saw too many guys in the minors, like 30 years old, bounce around, fifth team, you know, rounding out a roster. And I said to myself, I'm never going to be that guy. So started out okay in 88, and then, you know, started to struggle, had some arm issues. And then I basically retired. So that was it. I wanted to go out on my own terms, and, you know, I'd gotten up to the big leagues. I just felt like there was more that I wanted to do with my life and didn't want to just hang on.
So let's get into the challenges of raising kids to play and actually love the game like you did, because that really is the biggest challenge. You know, the average viewer of a baseball game on TV is well into their 50s at this point, and it's a problem. Now, you are a very busy businessman. Not easy to be there every day and mentor a child's athletic development.
Yeah.
What were your biggest challenges, and what would you do the same or different with your two boys?
Yeah, you know, I think I was pretty lucky with how, you know, with my business. I'm going into my office or I'm on a movie set. But when you're on a movie, it's like maybe for 3 months. So it never really, once the kids got a little older and started playing baseball, didn't really. I was never like gone for a whole season. So it worked out just really well. And I try to be as involved as possible. When they're little guys, I would always help coach. Always coach, don't be the manager. That was my motto. And I would help kids, help all the little guys with pitching and you know, just help out. And I would always kind of encourage my kids. I never wanted to push them too hard. But we then moved from Pacific Palisades when the kids were really young, kindergarten, first grade or second grade. And we moved out to the Palisades from the Palisades to Westlake Village. And that we came out in 2010. Mm-hmm. So then I think it was like Pinto ball and then Mustang and then Bronco. And I always tried to, you know, assistant coach and help out you know, try to work with my kids. You know, listen, I realize my kids probably didn't have that elite talent. I think they had good arms, and it's tricky, right? To see. And then once I could always see the kids that were kind of excel in any sport, whether they played soccer or, you know, basketball. There's always that rule, right? There's 1 to 3 really good kids. There's like about 5 or 6 kind of in the middle where they're okay. And then there's kids that really can't play at all. And that, you know, follows every team. So I think my kids were probably just under the really elite 3 kids and like kind of in that upper middle, you know. But then it's funny. I'll tell the audience where we met. Before we even really knew each other, we went up to the fields up at you know, where the YMCA. They built these beautiful fields in Westlake Village, and I, before the season, I brought my kids up there, and I would hit grounders to my one kid, and he'd throw it to the other one, and then, you know, I'm on one half of the field, and then you came in with your two kids. they clearly were twins, kind of small kids, and I'm like hitting little tiny ball. You're drilling balls in the outfield, and I'm looking at these kids. And I'm going, holy shit, these kids can play. I'm watching them catch and throw, and how they, you know. And I was like, oh my God, like that's, they're not, you know, my kids barely thrown it to each other. But so that's how we met. And I introduced myself and we said hi. And then I saw you after that. We got to be friends. But your kids, I could see were elite. Like that's the definition of elite, as far as like coordinated, like great instincts, leaders, and just knew how to play the game. And, you know, I felt like when I look back, I kind of had that same thing where, you know, mostly, you know, I mean, I hit up until high school, but you know, I knew from, you could see the kids that were like better, even on other teams, that were like, okay, that kid's really good, you know, and those are the kids that can maybe move on from high school to maybe college. And but your kids, I said early on, I'm like, that your D1 kids, you know, for sure. So you know, unfortunately their season got a little derailed, but heading off to college. Isn't that crazy that they're heading off to college now?
It's unbelievable. Good college. Great coach. Yeah. I could plug him. Santa Clara, Coach Filter and Coach Carson over there recruited him. Well, I'll get into my story at some other point. But what advice would you give parents today on how to develop their sons and daughters' athletic abilities and find the sports that resonate best with them?
I think you got to find that balance. You know, it's so competitive now with the year-round baseball, you know, and all these travel teams. I didn't really have to deal with that too much. My kids played a little bit, but, you know – the really good kids get the calls, and they get, you know, teams that want them. So I think it's being able to shut it down for a little bit, you know, giving your kids a break and not using those same muscles. I think it's good to take a couple months off, you know, because, you know, you start again in the fall, and I think high schools are pretty good with how they do it, but then you've got the other teams that you're playing. It's just, you know, not playing too much. I did bring, even though I pitched and I certainly can coach to a certain degree other kids, it's probably harder to teach your own kids. So I actually at one point did bring, the only time I brought both my kids to a pitching coach who I thought was really good, and I thought it worked really well. You know, unfortunately my kids, you know, both got cut when they changed coaches at Westlake. So Hayden got cut after playing a freshman and sophomore year, and Luke didn't make the freshman team, so that was the end of their baseball. But I thought he was making progress, and it would have been interesting to see what they could have done or where they could have gone. It's funny because Luke now has been out of baseball for 2 years, and I'm throwing with him in the back, and he's gotten like 7 inches bigger. He throws pretty good. And I'm like, man, that would be fun if he tried out for baseball again. But I think it's hard to kind of, you know, do that if you haven't played in a while. You
know, I don't know. How tall is he now? Is he taller than
Hayden? 5'10".
5'10"?
No, Hayden's like 6'1". So
Okay, Hayden's tall. Hayden's a big kid.
Yeah. But I think it's finding the balance, and you know, there's so many things, there's so many opportunities, right, with travel teams and the indoor facilities and weight training. I would just say to be safe. You know, a lot of kids have batting coaches, they have, you know, trainers to get stronger. You know, but which prepares them a lot better. But I think it's finding the balance. You know, you just don't want to burn them out. I mean, I think your kids, Kelly, just loved the game so much. I don't think you could probably do that. You know, you just got to watch for injuries and that kind of thing. But it's just finding the balance, I think. Because I think when I talk to a lot of guys that still play or played, I think they feel like kids play too much. You know, they just play year round, and it's harmful, especially when you're younger. You know, those leagues and those tournaments are year round. I mean, you know this, right? So it's you know. I think parents sometimes get a little carried away, but it's all about getting their kids seen. I think Tiger Woods, I think it goes back to Tiger Woods' dad and how he was involved. And, you know, Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods, but, you know, I think a lot of parents think they, with enough help, they can turn their kids into something really special. And the reality is it's so hard to go on to college and play, you know, after high school. Just enjoy it. Get your kid to high school. Enjoy it. If anything happens after that, it's great. Don't think your kid's going professional. The chances of that happening are so remote. You know, I always had a dream of it, but I always went to school and I never thought like that it would happen. Even in college, I was like, you know, maybe, especially after I played that 1 year with that Baltimore team, that's when I felt like, okay, you know, I might have a career after this, or a chance to have a career. And, you know, and I was able to play 5 years, you know, mostly in the minor leagues, but it was great. But it's so rare to get that opportunity and to try to count on it. I think just too many kids in general try to count on it. Enjoy the game. It's awesome. There's so many more, you know, kind of avenues to be seen, but don't go too crazy with it, you know? So, but it's easy to say, right? Because if your kid's really, really good, you just want to keep giving them every possibility, right? Yeah. And, you know, it's, but finding that balance.
Yeah. Where do you think baseball is off track regarding how the game's being handled and marketed to our youth right now?
I think that just it's the fracturing is it just that I feel like it's the evolution of, like, when I played and you played, everybody played baseball. Everybody went out for the baseball team, and it was just, that's what it was, you know? And I think now with video games and kids' attention spans, it's a patient game, right? It's you could sit out in the outfield for hours and only get one at bat. And, you know, it just, you know, that's what it is. So I think kids are just get bored. They get bored.
Bored. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's an issue. Yeah. I understand that.
Yep.
What's the next project for you coming through the pipeline?
Hollywood. I have this movie coming out for Disney on Disney Plus about a Clemson football player. It's still untitled, but it will be titled soon, but it came out really well. And it's kind of going to launch Christmas Day. And then I had a movie that was supposed to start about Kurt Warner, and that's going to push. So I probably have some things starting in the spring. A couple things with Amazon, a couple things with Netflix. Not all sports projects, but still quite a few. I love that genre. But just try to keep busy and try to get past this crazy COVID stuff, you know?
Well, we will. And that's a great genre to be in. There's nobody else doing good sports movies, frankly. Or a couple pop through here and there. But for the most part, I think what we've done is...
I've been lucky with getting that niche, for
yeah,
sure.
You've set the bar, that's for sure. Million Dollar Arm is a great movie. In fact, I'm due to see it again. It's one of those movies that you with your kids and watch. It's fantastic. But Mark Chardy, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah, pleasure. It's our maiden voyage too, so it's not like I haven't done a million of these. But for this one, the prospect pipeline, it's something that we all try to fit our kids in. But we need to know the blueprint on how to get there, and so that's why I put together this podcast. We call it the Prospect Blueprint. And share, comment, like, let people know that they could get some good resource out of this. And I appreciate it. Mark, have a great...
It's a great idea. I love the idea for this. You know, it's good for parents to hear, you know, what to do and not do, and just hear other people talk about it and their journey.
Yeah, we're gonna push this pretty hard. And have a great rest of your summer. And we'll be in touch. We owe each other a beer anyway. We talked about it, man. We got to make it happen.
We can go outdoors.
Cheers.
All right, Kelly. Take care.